electric radio free. You see blue skies and think of sea. How are you doing? And later on, switch on TV. They give me a news, they give half truths to me. They give us wise, they feed us lies. How are you doing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To educate, they fabricate. And we sit back till it's too late.
The Radio Avenger.
Rick Adams is on.
Folks, we are here. Hour number two. We're waiting to contact Professor N. Raphael Johnson, rustjournal.org. And he, as you know, has been a regular on these programs for some time now. And I like to tell the story, by the way, of how I met him. And I personally came in contact with him right there in D.C., District of Criminals, in, I forget, was it 2003? When we went to the American Free Press Barnes Review symposium that they had in D.C., and he was among the speakers. He and, as a matter of fact, that's how I met Tom Kimmel. You know, Thomas K. Kimmel, who, by the way, will be back at the end of this month. He's invited back, and he should be here on the 30th of March, that Saturday, because I want him to talk about the Soviet role in all of this in Pearl Harbor and just how deep a role the Reds had in controlling Roosevelt and in controlling Churchill as well. Unfortunately, the truth, of course, is that it is a major role. But right now, I believe we do have Professor Matt Johnson on the phone lines with us or on Skype. Hello, Matt. How are you?
Nice to be here, Rick. You know you're my favorite host, the very first host that ever interviewed me many years ago.
Yeah, I just mentioned that.
I'm glad you mentioned the Red Army because I have a new book coming out in a couple of weeks from the Barnes Review on the Soviet Union. So,
well, tell us about it. Tell us about your book.
Well, you know, it's my specialty. Russian history has been my specialty for, you know, 20 years.
Of course, yes.
And these are translations that have never been done before. The thesis essentially is that, of course, the Soviet government never cared about labor, never cared about workers. This was a transmission belt to enrich themselves, that Stalin, Lenin, and Trotsky didn't differ in any way, not in terms of ideology, not in terms of policy. And a lot of apologists for the Soviet Union want to claim that Stalin was the only bad guy, and of course that's far from the truth. It was essentially one bureaucratic system. Stalin just had a better system to work with than Trotsky did. So it's a series of essays that I've published over the years in different places. And no one's arguing what I'm arguing. So I also have a few essays on dissident literature as well that I've never been dealt with before. So it's definitely a unique book.
Yeah, and when is it due to come out?
Oh, really a few weeks now. Everything's been done. The Barnes Review is published. It's now my third book from the Barnes Review. The first, the third Rome on Russian monarchy, the second one on Vladimir Putin's political thinking, and this third one on the early Soviet Union.
That's fascinating. I was just mentioning that Tom Kimmel, of course, he was at the same conference where I met you, as you recall, and it was his granddad that was Admiral Thomas Kimmel's granddad, was husband Kimmel, and he and Short, General Short of the Army, were set up by Roosevelt for Pearl Harbor. When you think about that, you know, the Soviet apparatus, the communist apparatus in this country and in Britain had to be quite extensive, as was borne out largely by the release of the Venona intercepts in the 90s. But still, I don't think we've even touched the surface of how incredible this control grid was over these politicians, and particularly, Matt, the media. You know, you cannot deceive the world unless you have the media under your thumb, under your control. And these people were adept at it. You know, I look at those old newsreels going back to the Bolshevik Revolution when there was no radio and there was no television and there was no internet. And yet you could see these madmen, you know, they were churning out printing presses, you know, printing presses, just the incredible amounts of paper being printed, booklets to stir up hatred and revolution against the Tsar. And against the, you know, the system and against his family and so forth. And I look at them and I can see in their, you know, their faces determination. You know, you can see that wrath and that hatred and that look of total and complete depravity. And this is the kind of people, these are the seed lines, you know, that are responsible for this bloodletting that took place in the 20th century. Incredible. But I see it myself and,
there's no doubt. It was a Jewish movement. The early Bolsheviks were Jewish. There's no getting out of that. You could make all the arguments you want. There's, you know, the lists are out there. The names are out there. There was never a time, let me put it like this. There was never a time when the United States ever fought the USSR on ideological grounds. There were a few spats, like in Korea or Vietnam, that really were over the empire just getting too big.
Yes.
But the U.S., there was no Cold War. The U.S. consistently traded with the Soviet Union to an extreme degree, right up until the end. As Anthony Sutton proved, the electrical grid of the entire USSR was laid by GE. Henry Ford built the first massive truck plant in Soviet Ukraine in 1936. The Rockefellers owned the and developed their oil capacity. Everything. They didn't have the intellectual apparatus at the time. They were either dead in exile or underground. And it got so bad that even Stalin early on was worried about the independence of the Soviet Union because there was so much Western investment coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So the nonsense that the U.S. was opposed to the Soviet Union is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. Now, when a nationalist or a Eurasianist president like Putin gets in, now there are sanctions on it. Now they're ripping Russia and Russians in the media on a daily basis. Nothing like that ever happened in the Soviet era.
Isn't that amazing, though, how corrupt and totally transparent the media are with such a blindsidedness and incredible inconsistencies? You know, when Walter Duranty went to the Soviet Union, you remember the New York Times reporter? What did he come back with? Well, he came back with getting a Nobel Award later for being so, you know, honest and brave to go to the Soviet Union and paint such a rosy picture of life there. He just flat out lied. And, of course, the New York Times, lying is nothing new to them. But, I mean, that's been their badge of honor right from day one. But then, you know, John Reed, we remember the John Reed stories and Reds, the movie Reds with Warren Beatty. And how that was popularized and his lofty portrayals. And then when the Cold War started, then we had Herbert Matthews of the New York Times and all of his, you know, propaganda about Castro and Cuba and everything else under the sun. So they romanticized the communists. They demonized the Germans and the Germanophobia that became so prevalent in the United States in the 30s. That it was pretty apparent who was running the show. You know, the old saying, if you want to know who rules, just see who you can't criticize, right? And that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, I mean, if you're on a university campus and you dedicate yourself to Mao Zedong, you know, you're going to get tenure. You're not going to get attacked. But if you come out as a National Socialist, that you really can't. You'll be driven off campus. But the only place really that Marxism was ever taken seriously was on American university campuses and British university campuses.
Yeah.
You know, this is the Soviet Union was even liberals back from the 30s to the 70s saw the Soviet Union as a wave of the future. You know, even though Solzhenitsyn got the Nobel Prize, he was hated by the literary establishment. Even Gerald Ford refused to meet with him so as not to anger the Soviets. But you see what the U.S. is doing to Putin today. There were nuclear weapons in Poland and Romania and the Baltics. That never happened. Nothing even remotely close to that ever happened. The Cuban Missile Crisis was the closest thing that happened over a few months, and that was it for this entire so-called Cold War. It was never over ideology. there was some rivalry over the sheer size of the Soviet Union and the fact that they could create a trading bloc without the U.S. But even the white armies, they did not get a bullet from the West. They had more money than the Bolsheviks did, but no one was willing to sell them anything. Their weaponry came from captured guns from the Reds. The Reds were smaller, less popular, but they were granted huge subsidies from the West. The Japanese could have crushed the Soviets in Siberia a thousand times over, and the West threatened them. The British could have crushed the Bolshevik, the Petrograd Soviet right away. It was so small, and they were told to stand down. No, the Soviet Union was created by the United States and the West as a way to challenge Germany, to keep Germany in line, and of course bring Jews to power. That ended, you know, in the 1970s. There was no real profit to be gained in the USSR anymore. So all of a sudden, Jews turned anti-communist. But up until then, it was very much and of course, I also have an essay in the book that completely debunks the notion that Stalin was anti-Semitic. He was nothing of the kind. He surrounded himself with Jews. Both his children married Jews. He spoke Yiddish. He was not a Jew himself. Mm-hmm. Wow. But that's mythology. He was never a Russian nationalist of any kind whatsoever. That is pure mythology. Whether the story about that is that the left, you know, the left, when Stalin began rounding up some of the old Bolsheviks from the first generation of the revolution, they were all Jews, almost every last one. Mm-hmm. So historians in the West had a choice. Either we say that, yeah, it was all Jewish, or we say that Stalin was an anti-Semite. Well, they couldn't say the former, so they said the latter. Stalin never said a word against Jews whatsoever throughout his reign. And I have in the book, I have quote after quote after quote from Stalin in English saying that he's enforcing the death penalty against anti-Semitic speech in the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. That's a huge myth. There's so many myths, even on our side, there's so many myths about it. It has to be put to rest.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely true. I was just reading that the other day. The anti-Semitism crime in the Soviet Union. And again, that has to tell you who was in control. You know, the myth of the anti-Semitic myth, of course, they're not even Semites or Shemites, but, you know, the fact of the matter is that the term is effective in brandishing a code that would silence speech. You know, the word racism now, of course, everywhere. The word anti-Semitism everywhere. The word nationalist and white nationalist. All of those derogatory terms have become just that, negative terms, killer terms, we call them, you know, to kill conversation, to kill debate, to steer the passions and, you know, in the minds of people and any discussion, because we're not going to be called that, are we? Like you were called sexist years ago, you know, that was the big thing during the debate on the Equal Rights Amendment, you know, she's a sexist, he's a sexist, a misogynist, and so on and so forth. So the terms, really, the way people hurl terms around are very effective in trying to squelch debate, aren't they?
Well, they don't have any stable definition, which is part of done on purpose. Mm-hmm. And they spread the net so wide that everyone and their mother is a racist and anti-Semite. So its effectiveness is starting to wane.
Everybody, yes,
you know. So they call everyone this. Everyone's an extremist, so it, you know, it doesn't really, it doesn't bother me. It's a badge of honor for me.
Yeah.
You know, I can't be punished by anybody. I'm not in an institution where they could punish me for that kind of thing. Yes. I'm independent, thank God. So,
amen.
And I think I'm in an enviable position, as are you, because we can say what we please, and there's very, very few of us. I'm one of the few historians that actually can function as an actual historian, and not an apologist for the regime. You know, the whole point of scholarship, Rick.
Right.
The reason why I got a PhD, the reason I studied so hard, the whole point of scholarship in any field is to strip away the image and get to the essence. Strip away the appearance and get to the reality. That's the only reason scholarship exists. Mm-hmm. And I don't care what field it is, that's what you do. But in America's universities, the exact opposite is the case. The only thing that's rewarded is conformity. And I know of people who have are shockingly ignorant about their fields with tenure at prestigious universities, These kids are not getting an education. And, you know, education isn't exactly a product that could be defective, you know, like a car or something. So you can't really sue for a bad education because it's not really, it's just an abstract thing. So they could do whatever they please. And the American university system is a complete disaster. And just, I know my field, and I got a PhD in two fields, you know, philosophy and the history of political ideas. But in both of those fields, the only thing that matters is conformity.
Right. Well, you're absolutely right. No question. You know, I've seen it myself. It's consensus and conformity, actually. You have to build a consensus. And it's done by extortion, you know, and blackmail. There is no academic freedom to speak of in the world of academia. When you really come right down to it, you've just proven that. There is a very restricted environment, and in many cases, the money has changed hands. As we said before, you know, with these powerful criminal banking systems, actually the families actually endowed the chairman of the department and picked the faculty, so they would just repeat the lies, and then the companies that produced the textbooks were all tied into the mafia, the Cosa Nostra, you know? So they had to publish what they had to publish, and be it lies or not, it didn't matter. That's what you studied. That's what you wrote your dissertations on, based on whatever it is they fed you, whatever pablum they fed you. I mean, in 1971, and when I was in college, and I was going through this, and I had altercations with teachers, you know, I could see the rage that I generated in some of them, you know, particularly when I started to contradict the official party line, that, you know. So, I mean, and some people, I know one in particular, paid a price with his grades, and he was actually targeted. He was actually blacklisted by the other faculty because he dared to call one chairman of the history department a Marxist. And, you know, I can cite you chapter and verse. And
well,
he was smeared.
This has been my life. This has been my life. I've been fired from every university I've ever taught in. And I've taught in five. I'm the most popular professor wherever I go. Students absolutely love me because I'm edgy about things. But that has, you know, pleasing students and being popular with students has nothing to do with being rewarded in academia. I was removed from every university solely based on even, you know, very minor ideological. I mean, I didn't preach. That's not a way to teach anybody. No, the liberals always do, but I never editorialized. My philosophy in teaching a class is no one thinks they're the bad guy. You have to explain these people to students the way that these people understood themselves. Mm-hmm. What did a slave owner in the South think he was doing? Did he think he was evil? Well, no. What did he think he was doing? Why did Hitler come to power? You describe what Germany was like in the 1920s, and you say, okay, what would you do? And there's no preaching there. That's exactly the kind of critical thinking you have to instill in students. But that was enough. Right. That was sufficient. And I've been fired, five times, despite having more publications than any three of those professors put together, despite being the most popular by far. There was a protest to get me reinstated at Mount St. Mary's University in Maryland in 2008. A lot of them black students, by the way, most of them female. And it means nothing. And even tenure doesn't mean much, because if you have tenure, you know, you can't be fired, but they can make your life very miserable. They can have you teach, you know, BS classes and you know, not in BS, and you'll eventually have to leave. So these aren't protections. Students are not getting an education, period. These guys are incompetent. They're stupid. I know it for a fact. I know so many of them personally. And when I was in grad school, you know, I got by. I didn't hide anything. I got by because I was nice. I was never disagreeable. People liked me. And, you know, you don't go in on your first day and you know, Zeke Heil. So we'll talk about it later.
All right. We'll take a break. And by the way, let's invite callers. You got a question for Matt Johnson? Now's the time to call in. Don't be shy. 1-800-313-9443, and we will return with more Rick Adams Uncensored.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Whatever needs to be done, we gotta do ourselves.
And we're back now, ladies and gentlemen, with Professor M. Raphael Johnson, and we call him Matt Johnson, all of his friends. So if you'd like to ask him a question or make a comment on this or any other subject, feel free and welcome to do so. 800-313-9443 is our number. And you were just, talking about that era of universities and going way back. It didn't just happen when I was going to college, the politically correct atmosphere, taking over. It went back to the 1960s, and prior to that, you could see the change in the mood, because in the 1930s, if I'm not mistaken, Matt, you had this big infestation in the academic world of communists and Soviet agents working their way into the classrooms of America. And this was a very real threat, a very real threat by the time of World War II and beyond. And we saw the effect these professors and faculty were having. It's just incredible, because they were teaching kids. They were teaching students who, in many cases, were unsuspecting. They didn't know their professor was an actual Soviet agent or somebody who was aligned in spirit and kind with the Communist Party of America, and they just trusted them. And they, they got passing grades if they mouthed back the pablum they were fed. And they didn't, then maybe their grades were not so good. But the infestation in the academic world was every bit as harmful and real as what's your place in the media, what's your place in government, what's your place, yes, I dare say, even in the churches. Well, and we saw that with the FCC, the Federal Council of Churches, becoming so pro-Soviet, pro-communist, that then they finally had to change the name to the National Council of Churches because they had become ineffective. They were discredited by that eventually. So, you know, Matt, it's just, you know, you've seen it. You taught side by side, I'm sure, with college professors in your time that were hardcore communists. I'm sure you have, right?
Yes, and I had a tendency to be friends with them on a personal level while still being opponents with them on an ideological level. So the guy, I got the University Scholar Award at the University of Hartford in 93 to do a senior thesis. And my advisor was Victor DeLugan, who is not only a homosexual, who died of AIDS in 1997, but a Marxist. And he was my friend. He said, it doesn't matter that we disagree ideologically. You're good at what you do. And so I was able to bring this out in people. You go on the first day and start talking about Hitler, it's not going to work. You have to be friendly. You have to show that you're harmless and that you're honest and that you want legitimate discussion. And it'll work. If you show them respect, they'll show you respect. And that's been my experience. Knowing that I was such a small minority on campus, I had no choice but to do that. So this is how I was able to do that. When I got fired from Mount St. Mary's, the only guy who defended me was a professor in the music department, a Jew. The only guy who came into my defense was Rosenfeld, Andy Rosenfeld. So, you know, it your personality has a lot to do with it. I fought and clawed my way to get all my degrees, which is why I hate it when there are all these fake PhDs out there. It really pissed me off because I worked so damn hard to get it.
Yes.
But still, the way to do it is to show that you know, you're honest and that you're friendly. The chairman of the department at the University of Nebraska when I was there was David Forsyth. I got my PhD from there and I taught there for several years. And David Forsyth is one of the deans of the human rights movement in this country. You know, he works at The Hague and the UN and everything else. He called a secret meeting about me. My advisor was in Princeton at the time and wasn't there, to have my funding removed so I couldn't go there anymore. And he failed. But this is a man who spends all day long talking about freedom of speech, who then called a secret meeting without any student representatives late at night to get rid of me. Mm-hmm. And he's retired now. Mm-hmm. But this is what happened. This is normal. There was anarchists running departments with an iron fist. Isn't that strange? It happens all the time. These ideologies are weapons. This is how they get ahead. You get a few beers into them, especially if they're white and male, you'll hear something altogether different. But it all has to do with how you approach it. Your personality has to be friendly and honest, and you can get by. Now, maybe that's
Of course.
This is in the 90s.
You come on like a hornet. Well, you know, you're going to get rejected. You're going to get a little repellent at you, but if your attitude is congenial and you seek to meet people on a personal basis, but keep your values and your scholarship, then that's all well and good, you know, and that's the way you do it. That's the way you really have to be effective these days, and it's sincere. It's not like you're assuming that for the sake of doing it, but it is part of your genetic makeup, you know, I think, definitely.
Go ahead.
No, I remember a time here in my state where, again, to prove the infiltration in the college levels and in the library system particularly, we had a public library here. And I'm going to relate this story when I come back because it goes to prove how kids' minds can be altered and affected in that time, pre-internet, by censorship. And this is how the left has always operated. All right, we'll come back with Matt Johnson, my guest. Stay on the line. If you're on the line, we'll take your call. Rick Adams Uncensored here. Support Republic Broadcasting.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. This product is superb. I have been taking it for about a year now, and I can feel my cardiovascular system run like a Swiss watch. I definitely recommend this product for anyone that has high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and heart palpitations, A+. It's potent, but it works. I have been waking up for the past 3 years with numb hands, and a week into using Extendivite, my numb hand seemed to have cleared up. My circulation was off, and now it's back on track. So I'm happy. I feel so energized, and I have my husband on it now. My mother-in-law has cholesterol problems, so I bought her a bottle as well. Thank you so much. Love the product. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
We're back, folks, and just a reminder that we invite you to tune in to Andy Hitchcock's program every chance you get. Just tune in any day of the week, andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com in the UK, and you will find it to be a variety of excellent programs and interviews, and mine was on just a week or so ago with him. So that's one thing. And also access the channel that we have on YouTube, and that is Rick Adams Uncensored, The Deadly Experiment. Okay, so you do all of that and be aware that, we're all in this fight together. And eventually, when we lose our freedom, when we lose all of this stuff, folks, you know that we can at least say we did our part and the blood is off our hands. So that's the most important thing. I wanted to get back to this little incident, Matt, just to prove to you how the censorship of the left is just absolutely unparalleled. We had a library in one city that was part of the interloan library system in the state. And we used to donate books throughout the system, you know, books that were published by Western Isle, you know, the Birch Society and other companies that would publish books that were out of the mainstream. And we did that at Providence Public Library. This one was in Warwick. And then, you know, we found that, interestingly enough, many of these books started disappearing off the shelves. And it wasn't for lack of, interest that they would like to have you believe, or just worn-out books or stolen books. you know, we found out that there was a pattern there of certain people, and one in particular, the director of the library, Sandy Lane in Warwick, who made it a point to decide what would go on the shelves and what would not. So he started to censor those things, and we had a fight with him, and we bloodied his nose a little bit, because that was in direct violation of the American Library Association's so-called Bill of Rights. And these books would disappear. And he was openly homosexual. And the guy was just blatant about his left-wing proclivity. But this is an example of how books that you've donated and given at expense to yourself to these libraries would wind up in the rubbish pile, you see. One example among many. I'm sure you could tell many yourself.
Well, Rick, let me relate a story if we have time here.
Sure, go ahead.
At the end of 2014, the end of the semester, early December 2014, I engaged in an informal experiment. And I published the results on Patreon. And I called 20 university professors from more or less prestigious institutions. I claimed to be a graduate student at the University of Colorado. And these were all specialists in Russian and or Ukrainian history of politics. And I asked them very soon, I said, I'm doing research on this. What is your opinion on the violence in Kiev over the last few months? And I called 20 professors total, 10 male, 10 female, and then from each group, 5 older, 5 younger. And unfortunately, every stereotype imaginable was confirmed. Every single one gave the establishment view, it's Putin's fault, some, you know, stuff like this, you know, nationalism is terrible, all this kind of thing. And then after they all said this, I asked them, I was reading from a script as I'm doing this. I said, your view here is identical to most of your colleagues. It's also identical to the Washington Post, New York Times, State Department, Amnesty International, NATO, and the UN. Is this a coincidence? And it was, every single person, the only group of people that didn't get angry were older males. Younger females were extremely shrill. But the conformity, I mean, I proved the conformity. They all said the same thing using the exact same terminology. I had a few older males say that they're, they know it's BS, but it's a great gig, and I'm not going to sacrifice it for an issue over there that I can't control. Even though these are specialists in other words, what I was asking them is, what's the point of getting a PhD and going through all this if you're just going to support the establishment view on these kinds of things? But I had expected that the younger females would be the worst, and I was right. They are the biggest disaster in academia. I know for a fact they're pushed through their classes, especially if they're attractive. All they care about is proving themselves. They care about power. They are extremely ignorant. Because they're aware that they don't really have to work very hard to get where they're going. And this was a group of people who yelled at me the worst because I was challenging their authority. And they're the group of people who said, you know, do you know who I am? Kind of statements. But in all 20, everyone I called, I didn't get a single bit of evidence or a single bit of information to justify their point of view. It was all just pointing to themselves. So, you know, and I've done this over time. This was the only time I made it into an actual experiment.
Yeah.
You know, because I wrote from a script, and every stereotype I had about these people was confirmed. But the younger female professors now are a complete and utter disaster, and it's almost a crisis at this point. And as the older males retire, females are so, you know, they're all over. You know, they dominate academia at this point. And they're simply incompetent. And the difference between the older males and the younger females, the older males had a tendency to believe that what they were saying was nonsense. The younger females really believed it was true. They didn't give me any evidence to the contrary, but they believed it was true. And I almost did it because I wanted to break the stereotype I had in my mind about these people, and only confirmed it.
Yes, I know.
It was very depressing. These are the people who they have tenure. They have, yep. They're at big name universities. They're prestigious mm-hmm. people. And this is what I got. And unfortunately, you know, it was very depressing to see that I was correct about them. And they're teaching kids today.
Yes. And you know what? It's not just in the collegiate profession, academics. It's in doctors. It's in the medical field. It's in virtually every field. I get the same kind of story that you're relating to us today. The standards are down. The people who are coming in are unqualified. They're not being trained properly. They're not being educated properly. And it goes on and on. And I think it's really symptomatic also of the tenor and times in which we live as well. I think we're seeing a total de-escalation of civilization at every vantage point, I believe. I see it in everything. I see no pride in people's work. I see no ethics for the most part. You know, people just doing their job begrudgingly. They're preoccupied with social media. They're preoccupied with all of the nuances of this age. And they're really not the kind of people that we knew as we were growing up and their parents. So it is a total generational loss. That's my opinion.
As far I think you're right.
800-313-9443. I believe we have Terrence on the line. Terry, hello. Come on up.
Hey, Rick.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Yeah, of course, this subject you're talking about could go on for weeks. Your guest, Matt, is not even scratching the tip of the iceberg. I just want to make a couple quick comments. My wife is a professor at a university. And, after having long discussions with her, what Matt says is absolutely true. Only want to add that it's not even education anymore. What they're doing, the administration and the students kind of really have a leverage over the professors. And all they're trying to do is sell seats. It's all about selling seats. And they had a new, they tell the administration, tells the professors, you're a teacher, there's an imaginary line, but they never tell you where it's at. So, they're constantly, and then they're loving this as well. They're loving all of the international and out-of-state students because there's a big pushback because they can make so much money off of them because they're selling seats because they charge a higher tuition. So they had a new, every 2 years they have a new dean in the department. So they had a new dean she met with. You have to meet with them at the, fall semester. And the very first question out of his mouth to my wife was, what's your rate my professor ranking? That's all he was interested in. Where are you ranked? So they're constantly trying to massage the numbers to make the students happy so they can sell the seat.
That's one thing I'm giving basically a thumbnail sketch of what's going on. You don't really have to be there to get the full experience of what's happening. But I have a tendency to disagree with that because I was told at every university I taught in that the students don't matter. I was so popular. My student evaluations were through the roof. My rate, my professor's page is also through the roof. That didn't make any difference. If anything, it caused trouble because it created a tremendous amount of jealousy. And that just added to the problems.
She's teaching the students, she's saying, I don't know whether to hurt them or harm them, helping them hurt them. She's teaching it harder. Because she knows when they get in the real world and they do this practical application of stuff she's teaching, that if they're not equipped, they're going to sink. And so she's getting, guff from a lot of the students, and then that's reaching the administrators. And so she doesn't know what to do.
What field is it? What field is she in?
Accounting.
Okay. All right. That's a very different world. Yeah, that's a practical application. That's something that you really need to have. That's a hands-on field, unlike history or political science. Yeah, I have no idea.
Matt, she's constantly having every time she gives a test, she has to massage it to make this curve so they can get their, because it's, a fairly well-known university. They've got their prestige, 3 points, whatever that they're trying to get across the college. And so she's having to let the bottom one slide through so she can make the administration happy.
I had a student give a completely plagiarized paper to me, female. I mean, not a piece of it, the entire thing. Just so happens that I had read the article recently, and I knew it immediately. So I failed her. And, of course, I get a phone call from the dean, who was fired later on for a totally different set of reasons, and she asked me to give her a D. And I said, no. And she said, okay, I can't force you to do anything. But the very fact that she asked me to do that for such a blatant thing. I mean, she should have been kicked off campus, which is usually what, at least in the 90s, that's what would happen to you. The entire thing was just cut and paste. She didn't even have her name on it. She had it written on there, so she must have felt guilty. I was told to give her a D, and I said, I will not. So in that sense, we're talking about the same kind of thing.
Yeah, and they don't want a lot of Fs because it brings everything down. There's a lot of pressure to keep these seats filled. I've talked to these guys. I know what it's like.
But that was the only time.
I know the head of the education department. He won't even talk to me about it. We've had these discussions. I don't want to talk anymore about these issues because he's afraid he'll get back to him. He'll lose his job.
I was never really pressured about grades, but this may be a difference between the fields. I even taught, when I taught at the University of Nebraska, I had football players in my class. I had to give specific, that was when Tom Osborne was the coach, and I had to give reports periodically to the athletic department. But never once did they say, you know, you need to pass these people. My students had a tendency to do pretty well, and those who did poorly, there was a very specific reason for it, like the plagiarism thing. So that might be a difference in the fields here, but I was never pressured to give good grades.
Well, it's a curve.
Very well could be, Terry.
It's not. It's curving the grades, curving them up. I guess that's a bit semantics,
yeah.
But curving them up to keep everything, you know, flowing.
Yes.
Yeah, the freshman retention is a big deal.
The whole industry is an industry today, and I think it's been made worse by all of these subsidies and all kinds of free now tuition and Pell grants and you name it. You know, it has definitely, I think, had a degrading effect on the college.
Yeah, people forget universities are very powerful corporations.
Sometimes.
It's a very powerful corporation.
Keep the seats filled.
Yeah. And we know who's in the background there waving the magic wand, telling us to do it their way, right? We know all about that. Thank you, Terry, for your call. Excellent call, as always. I'm going to take a couple of more calls. But, Matt, you know, I was relating now. You know, Providence College, I'm sure you're familiar with, is a Catholic college in Rhode Island. And it started out being an all-men's college years ago. And, you know, and then, of course, they went whoring after federal dollars, as was the case across the landscape. They decided to have an opening of co-ed facilities and, of course, more money. More students, more grants, and all of that. And then they, you know, the thing is, that here they are, a Jesuit, well, not a Jesuit, actually, it's a Dominican college, Dominican priest. But in any event, they decided to expand their departments, and of course, they always do with the help of the feds, naturally. And guess what? They have a whole curriculum on the Holocaust now. They've had that for some time. And I said, how can a Catholic school be teaching the Holocaust when they're not even teaching history, the history of the Bolshevik Soviet Red Christian Holocaust? Yeah. It is incomprehensible. But then again, I just explained it. It's all about following the money trail.
Many universities have you could actually get a degree in it. Mount St. Mary's is a Catholic school, too, and there's a large seminary attached to it. Yeah.
Incredible. Incredible. Okay, let's take another call here for time. Fred in Michigan, you're up on the program with Matt. Hello.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. You've tweaked my memory big time. There is a college professor, Tony Martin, PhD, a Boston college, might have been Wellesley, in the 90s. He got his PhDs from Michigan State University and a JD from, I think, Cambridge. Anyway, he was sponsored by Paul Fromm, American Freedom Party, as well as David Irving, to speak on behalf in defense of Ernst Zundel, who was being attacked, assaulted for the third time in 2002, for daring to prove that the 6 million Kabbalah, Zohar, Voodoo, Hola hoax. Was a July Wood whole hoax. And he began to get into the origins of the transatlantic slave trade at Wells.
Yeah, Martin's black, right? Tony Martin's black.
This man, he was
a brilliant. Yeah, I know him well. Yep.
Man. Tony Martin, PhD.
Yeah,
So he, as he got into the curricula based on a book entitled The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews,
mm-hmm.
The Jewish onslaught came down on him. He wrote a book by that title, The Jewish Onslaught. They were even accusing him of raping his female students.
Mm-hmm.
And he was able to, of course, repel everything with facts from their own tribal members who had proved that, yes, indeed, the entirety of the transatlantic slave trade, the ships were owned by the satanic Talmudic Kabbalah, Zohar, serpent, Semanite, supremacist, racist, yada, yada, yada. And he did prevail. He did prevail.
Well, remember, my friend, Tony Martin's black. He had tenure. He had a lot of support among the black students. I've met him several times. He has a lot of weapons that I didn't have. And there's one group of people that I'm not uncomfortable talking with the Jewish question about, and that's blacks. They're not under any illusion in that regard. And so he had tremendous support among the black student body. But you brought up something else, using females to accuse professors. Now, thank God this hasn't happened to me. But many colleagues of mine, you know, if you're a female, you make an accusation, your name never gets released, not even in court documents. So you don't get to be held responsible for it. Anyone can do it to get rid of somebody. All you got to do is go to the lesbian club on campus and say something. And that's all you have to do. The accusation enough is enough to get rid of the guy.
And listen to this. When he went in defense of Ernst Zundel with Michael Hoffman, who authored the book The Great Holocaust Trial.
Yeah, I know it well.
1988. The Jewish Defense League was ever present demanding the murder of Ernst Zundel in this Tony Martin.
Sure.
Demanding the murders. That was justice, according to the Jewish Defense League.
Okay. They've been doing that for years. They've been doing that for years. That's nothing new for them.
I just, Rick, you really ought to sell. I wish you could be selling, like, Tony Martin's book, Jewish Onslaught, and The Great Holocaust Trial by Michael Hoffman. It was reissued in 2010.
Yeah.
The proceeds could really help support RBN. And I would not pass these out to the local libraries. I would find selected groups, student groups, et cetera. You know, sure. That would be my campaign.
Yeah, I've read Tony Martin on the slave trade, and I've read Michael Hoffman's one of my favorite writers, and I've read his book on the, he was there, of course, in the Zundel trial in Canada, and Michael Hoffman has a capacity to change your life intellectually. There's no question about it.
Well, first, thank you for that.
Yeah, and we can't forget his book, Secret Societies and Psychological Warfare.
Yeah, it changed my life.
Judaism Discovered and Judaism Strange Gods. Thank you, fellas. Sure. Thank you for
the
broadcast.
No question.
Thanks a lot. Okay, good point. He brought up.
He's got good taste. He's got good taste in writers, yeah.
All right, Michael in New York, and see if we can fit in Ray as well. Okay, Mike, you're up on the program with Matt Johnson.
Good afternoon, Rick. Good afternoon, Matt. Gentlemen,
yes.
Let's also recall specifically in the manifesto by the commies to destroy our country 100 years ago, along with property tax, income tax, Federal Reserve, Central Bank, make divorce easy, split up the family, flood the country with drugs, promote homosexuality as normal, control the education system. And here's the end result after that effort. 100 years later, they finally got this far with the education system in such a control mechanism that they have now. They're just turning out mush for brains instead of highly intelligent students that we were getting even 40 years ago, 50 years ago, 60
years
ago.
Yeah, and that's
ago,
right.
Kids
that's
were
exactly
real sharp.
Okay.
No, there's no question. He's absolutely right about this. And the American college campus is an authoritarian regime. They monitor your there's a cookie on your computer. If you use their network, they monitor everything you do. There are many blocked websites. Mine was one of them. When I was teaching there, at several places. And this is how, and of course, speech is highly curtailed. You know, the speech codes are intense, and you know, you could lose your federal funding if you don't have these speech codes.
There you go. Bingo.
So you have the federal funding as well as private, like Rockefeller Foundation and Carnegie Foundation. This is how they were able to take it over. Yeah, no question about it.
Follow the money trail, Mike.
Exactly. Now, prior, when this, like back in the day when the founding fathers established this country, they were all self-educated men. They didn't have the leisure of a day off to go to a school and get educated at the expense of everybody else working. No, they made this their own leisure time, which was rare, and they studied through books, their parents, etc. And this is, and they were all way smarter, way more educated than the average American today in multiple languages, real history, sciences, arts, and so back in that day and further back, all schools were private because the school was always generated, it's initiated by a master, say a musician, a Mozart, a Bach. And people wanted their kids to study under that master. Next thing you know, he had so many students, he needed a school. And so all schools used to be strictly private, and you would have to then be able to accommodate your child to enter that school. It wasn't a publicly funded nonsense system like today.
That's
and
right.
The real those teachers were real teachers. They knew that topic. They were masters at it. And that's all long gone, too, thanks to the Christ-killing pedophiles, Zionist scum running the world today.
Yeah, they're Jews are so disproportionately represented in academia. It's ridiculous. They're half the law professors. Half the law professors in America are Jewish. More, it's slightly more than half. They absolutely dominate.
Yep. Okay. Thank you again, Mike. He's always perceptive. See if we could squeeze Ray in from New York. Come on up, Ray. You're the last call we could take today.
Yeah, okay. I wonder if you guys have heard of the Indian cheating scandal?
The Indian?
Cheating, yes, cheating, academic cheating scandal.
You heard of the American Indians?
No, East Indians from India.
Okay,
You're talking about the major scandal now that's being advertised prominently through the media.
No, that's in America. That's in America, but the BBC did a report.
Okay, within India itself. All right, okay.
Yes, what happened is if you go on the BBC's website, just type in Indian cheating scandal, you'll find pictures of parrots scaling walls 4 or 5 stories high to give crib notes and answers to their students taking the test exams.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. And then I'm looking at a page right now.
I never heard of that before.
Indian cheating scandal, BBC. Check it out.
Thank you, Ray. Yeah. Thanks for your call. Okay. Hey, Matt, we're out of time, and I did want you to mention your journal, your website. People can always help you out because I know you've had your financial issues as well.
Absolutely.
Tell us once again how they can access you.
My website is rusjournal.org, rusjournal.org. I desperately need money to keep myself independent. And, of course, my radio show is The Orthodox Nationalist, and you can donate through there as well. Yes, yes. Any help you can give me, I appreciate
it. It's good talking with you again, Matt. Thanks for being on at such short notice. We'll talk again, okay? God bless.
All right.
All right, folks, we're out of time. Rick Adams, we'll see you next week. God willing.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.